Welcome, everybody. It's the Maggie Dawn Show. What I would like to know is how many people exactly does it take to overthrow the American democracy? I've been thinking about this one over the weekend. 844-967-2789. How many people exactly does it take to withstand an attempted overthrow of the United States government? Does history teach us any lessons about this? 844-967-2789, because I think the numbers here are really frighteningly small. And I've got, you know, almost an approximate tally in my head based on what we know from the January 6th committee and what we're now seeing in the Jack Smith January 6th indictment. How many people does it take to overthrow the United States government? How many people does it take to withstand that attack? 844-967-2789. What do you think about this? Because I think we came within a razor-thin margin. Before the hour is out, I'm going to tell you what the number is that I think it is. If you're a first-time caller, a woman, if you're a conservative, you're going to go right to the front of the line here on the Maggie Dawn Show, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. How many people did it take to push back Trump's attempt to overthrow American democracy? And what I think is astounding is if you were listening last week, I ended my show on Thursday talking about this indictment by sharing some sound from Vice President Pence himself. And what I think is very interesting is that we're gaining some insights about how Trump may defend himself. Because his lawyer went on all of the Sunday talk shows, literally all of them, and talked about it and said some things that I think are basically ludicrous on their face. And at worst, just absolutely outright lies. A generous word would be mischaracterizations, but I think we've got Trump's lawyer now out there lying about the indictment. I think Trump engaged in some potential witness tampering, you know, just a light witness tampering over the weekend. But we heard his vice president say some extraordinary things last Thursday. And again, I would have to count Mike Pence amongst the very few people who stood between American democracy and the abyss. Again, I'll give you the approximate total that I think it is before the hour's up. I want to know what you think. How many people do you think stood in the way, had a material role in actually forestalling the subjugation of the arms of power within this executive branch to serve not the mission, but the man? How many was it? 844-967-2789. First time caller, women callers, you're going to go right to the front of the line. But let's recap. Let's give the listeners a little bit of context here on you, because I think some of the stuff from the weekend and what his lawyer, and a new lawyer at that, he seems to have quite the revolving door there, guy by the name of John Lauro. So just by way of some context, especially for the conservatives out there that might be listening, I'm going to call this the full Ginsburg or the full Lewinsky, if you will, because Monica Lewinsky's attorney did exactly what this guy did back in 1998, and he hit all five Sunday morning talk shows. And that's a little bit unusual. So I think it's remarkable that he did this. He hit This Week on NBC, Fox News Sunday, Face the Nation on CBS, Meet the Press on NBC, and Late Edition on CNN. Now, Anya, over the course of the day, has been able to cobble together some of the sound. So we're going to share that a little bit with you. But again, how many people do you think it takes to get to the middle of a Tootsie Roll? Like, how many licks? Is it five people? Was it 10 people? I'll tell you what I think before the end of the hour is up, but I want to know what you think. 844-967-2789. And so I think John Lawyer, Trump's criminal defense attorney, Laurel, took a couple of shots at what he thinks might be possible defenses. Now, this to me is an interesting strategy. And it points to the fact that I don't think Donald Trump is interested in the rule of law. I don't think he's ever been. That's not a surprise. But the fact that he's going to try to defend himself in a court of law by appealing to sort of the vox populi, he's going to do this by testing defense theories literally on every Sunday morning political news show. That to me is extraordinary. Most criminal defense attorneys will tell you that the strategy is not to show the prosecution how you're going to defend the case because it permits the prosecution to prepare. And so today we're going to try to go through what I think some of those defenses are that his attorney, John Lauro, showed during these news appearances that he made on Sunday. But I think most of them are a little bit the emperor has no clothes, pun intended. Is he just trying to run some test polls without paying for them? It was a little cringy. Let's start with some of that Face the Nation sound you've got, Anya, queued up. Let's take a listen.
John, in the back and forth on this matter, you also said in the filing to the court that the former president would be willing to come to an agreement on this matter. What I want to ask you is, would that requirement be something where the president would agree not to release any information that was highly sensitive in this matter? And would he also refrain from any speech that called for or hinted at retribution about anyone associated with the prosecution of this case?
He's never called for that at all. He's going to abide by the conditions of his release. But of course, we would agree that any sensitive or highly sensitive information be kept under wraps. In fact, we made that proposition to the Biden administration, but they rejected it. They want every single piece of evidence in this case hidden from the American public.
John, before I let you go, do you remember what you were doing the early morning of November 9th, 2016?
I have no idea.
Well, I remember what I was doing. I was covering President-elect Trump announcing that he had won the presidency about 3 a.m. that morning after the November 8th election. My question to you, John, is how did he know he won?
Well, politicians are convinced in the righteousness of their cause, including President Trump, and he certainly believed that he won.
But on what basis did he know
he won?
But on what basis did he know he won?
Can I finish? Can I finish?
Sure.
Can I finish? And he believed in 2020 that he won based on the fact that he had 10 million more votes than in 2016. He had a situation where somehow President Biden, or at that time candidate Biden, received 15 million more votes than Hillary Clinton. And he also understood in 2020 that President Trump understood that he had won virtually all of the bellwether counties,
right,
and 84% of all the counties in the country.
We can wrap this one up. It kind of goes on. So let's recap here very quickly. No, the president hasn't ever threatened to punish political enemies. Was that really his lawyer's assertion?
It was.
The man's, right? The man has said as much in the last month on the campaign trail with respect to the Bidens. So let's just gloss over. I'll just lie about that, as lawyer says. Next one, sure, he'll keep the information classified, except when, you know, he was actually supposed to that first time. But, like, no problem here. In fact, we asked the Biden administration, but no, you didn't. You've been dragging your feet as it pertains to the various classification and processes that are involved under the Classified Information Management Act. That's just false, lying again. Well, what do you say, sir, about the fact that your client claimed very publicly to have won the election before it was called. What do you make of that, sir? Oh, well, that doesn't matter because politicians lie. Yeah, not all politicians have an angry mom that storms the Capitol. I mean, Al Gore, arguably, right, had an election taken from him by the Supreme Court. Did an angry mom show up in the Capitol? Bob Dole. Hillary Clinton, did an angry mom show up in the Capitol? Like, this is one of those things in the law, we call it res ipsa loquitur. It's fancy Latin speak for use your head, stupid. Means the thing speaks for itself when it's so patently obvious. Just pay attention to the obvious part. We're going to do some more on the sound in a little bit. But again, how many people do you think it took this time around? Because that's really the rub. How many people do you think it took to actually prevent this from happening? What I'm trying to get at here is that I think we need to be thinking about the proportions of people in the positions of power. What proportion of them were inclined to become active participants in daily violations of their constitutional duties, to subjugate themselves to a personality and not a principle, to a character instead of a country? How many of those people were there, and how many of there were there that were standing up for their duties and their duty to serve? And that's where the rub is, because I think that proportion might be changing if we see another term. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Join us, 844-967-2789. We'll be back with more in a minute. Last remaining days, I'd suggest basically from about December 25th at Christmas time until January 6th, whose hands were our country's future in? How many people had to decide to do the right thing? 844-967-2789, because I think, but for a few actors, the outcome here would have been vastly different. I promise the conservatives will go right to the front of the line, and I have to make good on that. CJ, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Do you think that we were close to a constitutional crisis, CJ? Regardless of what you think about the merits of Biden or Trump, do the events and how they played out over those days and what we're hearing about what Trump was told by some of his top lawyers, was it problematic? And how close do you think we came?
I think we were close, but I would say that we were closer back in 2016. You worked for the Justice Department, right? Or the you're an attorney?
No. I'm an attorney, sir. I've never worked for the federal government. I have not worked for the federal government until I worked for the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. I worked for a Reagan-appointed judge for a year, an Article III lifetime appointed judge. That's the only time I've ever worked for the feds. The year was 2003 to 2004.
Okay, well, I appreciate your work and obviously you're a dedicated servant to government, and I appreciate that. But I want to point out that you conveniently started with the Trump administration. And I'm curious how you feel, because I felt it started before that. I think it started after. Did you happen to read the Durham report, Maggie? Have you read it? It's only 300
pages. How many successful prosecutions came of that? How much new information was presented in John Durham's report? And my point isn't necessarily, CJ, my point isn't necessarily that everybody does the right thing, in every administration before Donald Trump, and all of a sudden we have a problem.
Can I ask you a question?
Go for it.
How about the 51 former intelligence officers that lied right before the debate? And we now know that's fact, that they lied. Social media covered it up from every American voter. And you spoke of the Trump attorney that made the rounds. And do you know how many minutes those talk shows devoted to Devin Archer? And who is Devin Archer?
I mean, CJ, so no, I'm not familiar with the 50. CJ, is it okay for me to not know? CJ, can I ask you this? So I'm not familiar with the 51 intelligence agents that you're talking about, but I'm happy to look into that. Is it okay if I don't know what you're talking about? And also point out that sometimes you tend to distract from the topic at hand, as opposed to maybe hypocrisy is only
in our government.
Well, like hypocrisy is only
don't want corruption, right?
No, I absolutely do not, sir.
Okay, well then. I'm surprised that you don't know about the 51 intelligence officers, because that's part of the cover-up that was proven in the Durham report. And you really should read it, because it shows the corruption, whether you're Republican or Democrat, the corruption that's and weaponization of our most trusted institutions is loud and clear. I don't care
let me ask you a question. Do you agree that the Justice Department should answer to the whims and the personal political objectives of any president?
Oh, hell no.
Okay.
No,
well, you know what? I'm going to say this. I'm going to call this a banner day, because you and I began, and I think we're here right now, with some fundamental principles that you and I absolutely agree with. And I'm going to also thank you for your kind words towards my government service, which I continue to this day. But here's what my fundamental question is. I'll accept that there's all kinds of hypocrisy. Okay. But if we're talking about hypocrisy, that means to a certain extent, then we're conceding that folks on our side on occasion do wrong things. And it's there to me today that the greatest question is that this man is currently running for president, and there are active criminal cases against him that draw into question the most fundamental of loyalties. Do you have loyalty to yourself, or is it to service? And my question to you always is not, is there hypocrisy and have Democrats done terrible things? Yeah, they have. But my question to you is, isn't this the greatest threat?
I think we have a current president that is our current greatest threat. And now China and Russia are moving their warships towards Alaska. And that you haven't covered.
Which president do you think has been more? 13 Gold Star families
testified today what a disaster this commander in chief is, because he's commander cut and run and bought and paid for by China. And
so
I wish you guys would look at this current president the same way you look at the former president. So please try to cover some current events sometimes, Maggie, sometimes.
Okay, listen, I am happy to, I had a Russia expert on, a month ago. Well, Anya, on the list, China expert, let's go do it. because I don't think that the China and Russian problem is being made or made worse exponentially by President Biden. I don't think a reasonable person can make an argument that Joe Biden has supplicated the United States in some greater way than Donald Trump did to Vladimir Putin. Keep it locked, CJ. I appreciate your constant listenership. 844-967-2789. Back with more in a moment. Welcome back, everybody. It's the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. You can go get that app anywhere you find your favorite app. Download it. You can join us with just one touch of a finger via text or by phone. Of course, the old-fashioned way works, 844-967-2789. How many people does it take to withstand a Trump overthrow of American democracy? I've always said this, you know, the test here is in a court of law. And Durham had his shot. And not much came of it. And unless you believe the entirety of Justice Department apparatus is supplicant to Joe Biden, that's a hard one to swallow. But let's go to Joe Anya from Madison. Joe, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop?
I couldn't begin to guess. I wanted to react to your previous caller, to CJ, and also to react to a first item that you had in the last segment or so. The first is in reference to CJ saying that, you know, our current president is the worst disaster ever to hit in terms of our military. I'd point out that probably the worst disaster for our military right now is Tommy Tuberville, the right. Republican senator out of, who's got, you know, what, 600-plus flag officers are not moving forward because he is stopping their ascension in the ranks. It's just the biggest screw ever. I mean, these are people who have given up their lives, their family life. This is their career. This is their life to serve in our military. And it's important and needs to be respected. And this chicken hawk out of Alabama who has never served is happy and content to screw them. And I think it's just a horrendous thing. And it's affected retention and it's affected recruitment in the military. So I'd throw that into the mix. But I wanted to react to you were talking about the fact about ordinary people, you know, their participation in this whole situation of basically stealing our democracy. And I wanted to return to the subject of the the fake electors in Wisconsin. Now, Maggie, yep. As I understand it, the Supreme Court ruled. The Supreme Court said, guess what? Joe Biden won in Wisconsin. And this came after like 60 court cases across the country. It came in after audits. It came in after counting votes again in Madison and Milwaukee and Green Bay. So after that, 10 ordinary people in Wisconsin made their way up to the state capitol. And as I understand it, there was an armed guard and Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald arranged for them to have shelter in the state capitol to be our false or fake or illegal electors, whatever you want to call it. They knew, Maggie. They knew. Yep. These 10 people knew that the Supreme Court had said Wisconsin is in the corner for Biden. We have done everything to make sure that we've had a safe and secure vote. Yet these 10 people sashayed their way in there with under armed guard, happy to steal my vote, your vote, other people's votes within the state. Who are these people? Who are these reckless people that would just say, doesn't matter, I am so intent on having Trump be president, I am willing to forego the most fundamental thing in our democracy, which is the results of the election matter, and you live with it. Whether you like it or not, you live with it. Yeah. If it's done poorly, you can go back and check on it. So I guess I find it amazing when I think about these individual fake electors who just thought it was A-OK to sash up to the state capitol, and isn't this funny, isn't this cute, we're going to be the alternative slate of electors. Under what rubric are they thinking, and I mean, the gall and the audacity to say my vote doesn't count because you want something so much more. It's so unfair. It's undemocratic. And I'd just be curious to hear your reaction. And also wanted to say I find your show just incredibly helpful, rich with information, and I appreciate it so much. So I'd be interested in your reaction. Thanks a lot, Maggie.
Thanks so much, Joe. So let's give names to all those fake electors from the state of Wisconsin. And let's remember, so we can be very specific here, Joe is absolutely right. The state Supreme Court here in Wisconsin upheld the results of the election, which had been subject to a recount, which in my professional capacity, in my day job as Milwaukee County's Corporation Counsel, I was in that recount. I provided legal advice to the Wisconsin Election Commission. Excuse me, the Milwaukee County Election Commission. And the tactic from the Trump campaign was to object to every single ballot counted in Milwaukee to delay our count to potentially violate these various deadlines. But the county persevered through that. We heard all arguments on both sides from the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign. And the Milwaukee County Election Commission ruled on all of the objections from the Trump campaign to all of the ballots. And then the Trump campaign filed a lawsuit and challenged a whole bunch of that stuff, both in federal court and in state court. But the state Supreme Court, where the bulk of the substantive challenges existed, the state Supreme Court ruled on December 14th, 2020, on a 4-3 decision that no, the state legislature doesn't have a role here, and no, you don't get to throw out ballots for all of these sort of facially spurious reasons, said Milwaukee, but not Wisconsin, and forgot a zip code. But the street address is verifiable, and it's where that absentee voter has voted from for the last 20 years. Yeah, you don't throw that ballot out. And it was on that date, December 14th, 2020, less than an hour later, the official group of electors met in the state capitol and they cast the state's 10 electoral votes for Joe Biden. But just as Joe from Madison explained, same night, the very night after the Supreme Court had ruled that Joe Biden was indeed the victor and should be awarded the state's 10 electoral votes, 10 people gathered in the state capitol, aided and abetted in their criminal conspiracy to undo the votes of hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites. They met in the basement and they decided that they knew better, just as Joe said. And here are their names: Robert Spindell, Andrew Hitt, Kelly Ruh, Carol Brunner, Scott Grabens, Daryl Carlson, Pam Travis, Mary Bustrin, Bill Feehan, and Kathy Kiernan. Nearly all of these people have had or currently hold leadership roles within the Republican parties of either the state or the counties in which they reside. And I want to also be clear, and this is part of the really extraordinary stuff here. We know in the indictment that co-conspirator number two, that this person is Jeffrey Clark. I was an environmental lawyer, and then I decided I'd become a constitutional scholar and come up with a way for Donald Trump to hold power. We know from the indictment, which is going to come out in documentary evidence, and this specifically has to deal with Mike Pence, because this is, we got to go back to some of these clips from Trump's lawyer over this weekend on Meet the Press and say, well, holy cow, 844-967-2789. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Tootsie Pop? How many people did it take to actually observe their oath to the Constitution to keep Donald Trump from taking over? My argument to you is that there is a surprisingly tiny group of people, and that the proportion of those that were willing to stand by their constitutional obligations versus those that were willing to sell their principles away to the next biggest, baddest billionaire baby. We got to be worried about that. These are paragraphs 90 through like 96. Goes on in the indictment. Purely talking about the pressure that the president, the former president, put on Mike Pence to overturn the election. And it goes on to say, like, this is paragraph 92. The defendant, this is Donald Trump, held a meeting with co-conspirator number two, this is Jeffrey Clark, the vice president, the vice president's chief of staff, the vice president counsel, blah, blah, blah. The defendantly, knowingly claimed to the vice president that there were election fraud and that the vice president should reject or send to the states Biden's legitimate electoral votes. This is crazy. The defendant deliberately excluded his White House counsel from the meeting. The defendant made knowing lines, quote, bottom line, we won every state by hundreds of thousands of votes. We won every state. The defendant and co-conspirator number two then asked the vice president to either unilaterally reject legitimate electors from the seven targeted states or send the question of which slate was legitimate to the targeted state's legislatures. The indictment goes on, when Vice President Pence challenged co-conspirator number two, Jeffrey Clark, on whether the proposal to return the question to the states was defensible, Jeffrey Clark responded, well, nobody's tested it before. It goes on, and it later states that a senior advisor to the president of the United States told him that Jeffrey Clark conceded that his plan is not going to work. So the very architects of this attempted coup were saying very openly, this has never been legally tested. We don't know that this will work. Going so far at Jeffrey Clark saying, quote, this is not going to work. It's incredible, and it's right there. They all knew this was hocus-pocus baloney. There's a reason that co-conspirator number six, the consultant Boris Epstein, emails after the memos are passed around about the fake electors scheme and says, don't call them fake electors, call them alternate. They knew it was a lie, and so did he. So how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Tootsie Pop? How many people did it take in those last 3 to 4 days of the Trump administration, at least leading up to January 6th? How many of them did the right thing? I'd argue to you that there were less than 50 people in the end whose jobs and whose opinions and whose actions and words mattered the most leading up to and immediately after January 6th. And I would argue to you that about two-thirds of that number 50 people did the right thing, including the vice president. Many of them were lawyers. Most of them, if not all of them, knew the truth. And my concern, my warning to you all, is that if Donald Trump should win again in 2024, when those hours, those last hours of his presidency may arise, my suggestion to you is that the proportion will no longer be two-thirds people who put the Constitution over caricature and patriotism over personality. My argument to you is that when these hours come again, if we do not take a stand against this man, the proportion will be the inverse. There will be two-thirds of them and only one third of the good guys. And that, my friends, is the real fear. Keep it locked. We're going to be moving on when we come back. Do you think people are being way more rude now than they've ever been? 844-967-2789. Is rudeness epidemic? This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 844-967-2789. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're always going to give you your last licks at the topic, but the next one, so we're going to read some text messages. Anya's going to help me out with that. We're going to take caller in this. But I do want to know, have you been experiencing extraordinary levels of rudeness? Are people just out of control? Did you go to the Barbenheimer weekend and say, like, well, what happened to moviegoers? 844-967-2789. That's our last subject. But let's hear from some of our texters on our last topic. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Tootsie Pop?
That's right. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a treason pop, perhaps? Wes from Middleton says, well, it took one person to prevent it in Wisconsin. That's Justice Hagedorn. It would have been absolute chaos were it not for him turning against his right wing bloc in 2020 and choosing a peaceful transfer of power. We got lucky there. Someone else who, by the way, folks, when you text in, tell us who you are and where you're texting from so we know, because some unknown fella said, I think it was about 10 to 18 people who stopped the election fraud. I don't know who those 10 to 18 were. Then these last four texts, I just love. These texts said, Maggie Strong, angry man. CJ is not an honest broker. Maggie, love, you're cool. It felt like a haiku, and I really loved that.
Maggie when you Strong, read it so, yeah, when you man. Read it so, yes, when you read it so poetically, Anya, I love it. We're gonna haiku that up. We got to put that somewhere out there on the socials. Thank you for the haiku.
A picture of Mount Fuji behind it.
Right, like let's observe some Zen. And to my friend that was talking about Justice Hagedorn, like 100%, right? It came down to that guy. I think some of the conservative wing has kind of gone off the crazy end a little bit on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Before the week's out, I'm going to talk about some of the internecine little wranglings that have been going on the Supreme Court just in these past very few days. 15 to 18. The reason that my number adds about 30 to that is because we know this to be true. So that my number would have been probably even around like 10, except for this fact. There was an incredible number of senior Justice Department officials who, with acting Attorney General Jeff Rosen, told Donald Trump in a critical meeting, I believe it was on late evening on January 3rd or 4th. I'll check that fact, but I'm pretty sure it was the third. It was the third Sunday, I think so. On Sunday or Monday that week before January 6th, basically told Donald Trump if he made Jeffrey Clark acting attorney general, they would all quit en masse. So it would look like sort of Nixon's massacre. I think it's called the Midnight Massacre. So anyways, it's because of all of those senior Justice Department officials who in those very last days kept Jeffrey Clark, who again said, this won't work. I don't want a court looking at this strategy. And it's never been tested before. You know, I always want my constitutional advice from someone's like, it won't work. I really don't want a court looking at it. And it's never been tested before. I'm like, hey, let's see if democracy works with those strength of opinions. That I'm sure nothing will go wrong. So I really appreciate the feedback. Listen, if you're texting, you can call us. But don't stop texting just because you won't call either. So is there an epidemic of rudeness? We just have a couple of minutes left. Mark from the SAC on this topic, or the last, my friend, you get a word. What say you?
Yeah, well, I think there's three licks, actually. That's what the old election told them, so I'm not sure if that's the answer to your question. People have definitely gotten more rude, but that's part of the whole symptomology of, you know, the whole Trump insurrection ties into that. I mean, that and misinformation is out there, right? And they can run with stories. And because I did a quick check on CJ's 51 rotten intelligence officers, and what that links back to is Hunter Biden's laptop, where 51 intelligence officers apparently signed a letter, said they doubt the, they say there's a potential that this is just partially Russian disinformation for Hunter Biden's laptop. I mean, that's basically the extent of what they're trying to run with on that particular story. I don't get it, because it, for me, not being a lawyer, but I think because that laptop was out of his hands for so long, that under the rules of evidence, that we don't know how it was contaminated with, you know, information that wasn't particularly Hunter Biden's.
Yeah, of course, you have to prove up custody and control, an entire chain of evidence. The laptop had been actually thrown out. It was at this digital sort of rehab refurbishing place. I mean, the evidentiary value of this stuff is low to zero, which is, again, why when it comes to Hunter Biden, my watchword and guide is show it or shove it. Because pictures of him doing untoward things, Marjorie Taylor Greene, is not appropriate for Congress or prime time. It just means the guy made some really bad personal decisions. Thanks for the call, Mark. So the reason I asked the question about the epidemic of rudeness, and maybe I'm wrong, but I have heard from some folk that, like, you cannot go to a movie now without everyone in the theater apparently participating or using their phones on the super bright setting. There is a super interesting article in the Washington Post by a couple of style commentators. Bad behavior at Barbenheimer reflects a worrying trend. I would say so, yes. Anya, you've been nodding your head vigorously.
All I'll say is this. The only rude people I met at Barbenheimer were men. I hate to be that person, but I did sit down in front of a gentleman at Oppenheimer, and he said some explicitives I can't say on radio, and then tapped me on the shoulder and said, ma'am, you're taking up half the screen. Can you move one to the right? So that was interesting. But I think you're right. I think maybe people are ruder right now.
I don't know if it's true, if this is just sort of digital malaise, if we all still are processing COVID plus everything that's been going on. But man, just be a little nicer. We can disagree. Just be nice. Be nice. That's my word for this Monday. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My thanks to Anya, as ever and always. And come back tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll have more for you.